My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we are your human hosts. On this week's episode, we have a little bit of follow-up on the AI George Carlin and the Samsung Galaxy S24 AI features. Before we dive headfirst into so many updates from Google and OpenAI with, you know, just a skosh of online child safety to keep it real for you.
Nice and light. Nice light topic.
Super light up today. We're going to need a bigger show. And hi, or buna, to our listeners in Romania. Buna.
Buna.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Tell a friend.
Tell, not just a friend, tell all the friends. So I want to kick us off with a little bit of follow-up, TJ, because last week we mentioned the whole George Carlin, you know, quote-unquote special. That was like the hour-long AI-generated show from Dudezy that was put up on YouTube. And then, of course, replicated a million times on YouTube.
Genie's out of the bottle once again.
So we talked about how Kelly Carlin, his daughter, was not very happy. She was considering legal action. Well, the family, it's official, they have filed a lawsuit. And what they're asking for in the lawsuit is really they want that hour-long comedy special, I'll always put in quotations, by Dudezy, removed. They want it gone. They want it taken off of YouTube. They want it wiped from the interwebs. And
good luck with that.
Right. So I watched this very short interview with Kelly, and you know, for her, it's just so much about like her dad's,
of course,
autonomy, basically, and his work, his life's work, and protecting that. So obviously, I wish them luck for sure. But the second follow-up to that is that we had talked about how it was AI generated. And do you remember, I think we mentioned, hopefully this wasn't a thought in my head and we actually talked about it, that there was a claim that, well, like my thought about it was they have to actually be, like these two are comedy writers, the guys behind Dudezy. So they're probably actually behind a bit of it. Like, is it fully AI generated? Well, that whole thing, it's now been admitted I was right. They're saying it was written by a human. Now, how much by a human? And maybe, and would you want to take the credit because it wasn't great, the jokes?
Yeah, exactly.
In apparently George Carlin's style and voice weren't great, so my assumption is somewhat written by a human. So in a statement provided to the New York Times on Friday morning last week, I believe, a spokesperson for Will Sasso and Koltkin, we remember last time we said we don't know who he is, but he's also a writer. They stated for the I'm Glad I'm Dead, the material itself was completely written by Koltkin, although the lawsuit's defendants have yet to confirm that if they employed AI for the Carlin vocal clone or accompanying artwork. So I don't know what if you, we should have got a lawyer on the show because I don't know.
Sounds expensive.
Is anybody out there a lawyer? Like, would this be a tech, like a strategical move to say, a strategic move to say, oh no, we didn't AI, like I, but then you're saying you created fake stuff and then also you lied and pretended it was AI generated. Like, it's just this very bizarre turn of events for him to say he wrote it.
Yeah, and it's hard to say, like, which is better, frankly.
Right.
And honestly, I'm not sure if it really matters because, you know, there's the image and the I guess the estate has some rights over the image, but they didn't do video. They didn't do generative video. They have an image, and whether that could be just a regular photo, perhaps it's generative AI. That's not clear. That made the photo. The voice, well, it's most definitely an AI voice model, and perhaps one of the two or someone else did the delivery. Maybe they have someone who is got the rhythm nailed, and then they just applied a George Carlin AI voice model to, just like we've seen multiple times on YouTube with, you know, the Kanye covers and AISIS doing Oasis songs and all that kind of good stuff. So when you, like, I took one for the team, and I listened to the whole special. And I listened to it at 1x speed. I didn't speed it up like I do with the podcasts. Again, pro tip, folks, if you find this drags a little bit, just speed us up a little. I listened to it at 1x speed just to, because for comedy, it messes up the timing if you listen to things quickly. And to be fair, it sounded like George Carlin. Like, there was a couple little bits here and there where it's like maybe the timing was slightly off. There is some crowd applause and whatnot, which sounded a little janky at times. To your point, the material itself was like, meh. I mean, George Carlin was pretty edgy for his time. And even that style of material today, like, it sort of works if you've never heard, like, edgy jokes before.
Right.
It was kind of retreading a lot of familiar ground, quite honestly. So, I mean, it's an interesting experiment. If they're admitting to be human writers for that, it's like, okay, is that something I'd rather say it was AI that did? Honestly, it felt like AI because the jokes were, you know, maybe the topics of the jokes were kind of in line with what you think an AI would assume about or would glean from George Carlin's material. It's trickier to get the delivery down, like the actual phrasing of things. And maybe they had some help. Maybe they had AI do a first draft, which a lot of folks do. And maybe they just punched it up a little. Hard to say. I guess this will all come out in discovery with the case. Honestly, I'm not sure if there's really a case there because it hasn't been established that necessarily that people own their own voice. Like, they're not claiming to be there. I mean, they say very clearly, like we talked about last week, that it's not George Carlin. So, I mean, you were talking about the difference between impersonating and replicating. So I guess it's a question if that's actually a legal principle, because they're not misrepresenting themselves as actually George Carlin. So yeah, TBD. It's just, again, once again, the lawyers will get rich. Ultimately, it'll be interesting in terms of precedent. So if the plaintiffs are successful, Kelly Carlin representing her father is successful, then yeah, that's going to have a bit of a chilling effect, probably. If it's unsuccessful, then it's going to be game on.
Big time. And speaking of game on, when we talked about all of the Samsung goodness when they launched the Galaxy S24 and there was all this AI goodness, what's going on with this? Is this not going to be free for people?
Well, the new AI features of the Samsung Galaxy S24 phones, such as Google's Circle to Search, and you might have a thought on that in a moment, and Live Translate, are free for now, but might require a subscription in the future. So there's a recent interview with Samsung's president of its mobile division. His name is T.M. Rowe, and he confirmed that the company will keep its AI free until the end of 2025. So that's almost 2 years for the S24 phones. But the may offer more powerful AI capabilities to customers who are willing to pay for them after that. So it sounds like the existing AI features will be free till then. I suspect that they're not going to start charging for existing stuff. That would be, I mean, just for example, like when we saw what Apple announced, what was it, in 2023, the emergency there's emergency messaging via satellite and whatnot, and they said it was going to be free for X amount of time, and you know it might cost some money in the future. If they start, with all these stories coming out about how people are using this to like not die, that for Apple to all of a sudden go, oh, okay, now it's, you're going to, you know, now pay us $10 or $20 a month with always returning it off and you're going to die. Like that would be kind of rough to do that. Now, to be fair, I think AI is a lot more expensive to run. Like we've discussed in the past, it's computationally intensive. And so what I think, in some cases, I think the cost might be coming down for, if you take features today, what will those features cost to run in a year or 2 years from now? Maybe you can still keep giving those away, but if there's more advanced, swishy features, we get people excited about these kinds of things, and here's even more. All right, maybe you know, there'll be a little bit of a premium charge for even cooler stuff. For example, an enhanced onboard assistant. I mean, they've got that already to a certain extent, but if they go even further, it's hard to say. Everyone's still kind of positioning themselves. Google, Samsung, you know, we're still kind of waiting to hear from Apple, but it would be really, it would be a bad look for them to start charging people for software features that they're getting for free at the OS level right now.
Yeah, we already bought the device.
Exactly.
We bought the thing with those features. That's all people understand. So, and then we already pay a monthly fee to talk on the device and to text on the device. So it's a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hard sell.
And people are already paying for a lot of premium features from, you know, whether it's Samsung or Google or Apple. So maybe they'll roll it into some of their bundles and encourage people to, you know, go for the bundles. Of course, other AI services out there charge a fee, like you know, ChatGPT Plus and Microsoft's Copilot Pro. So that's not unusual. I'd be curious to see what the conversion rate is on that for all the subscribers out there, say to ChatGPT, what percentage are actually paying for Plus.
Here's the bundle I see
mm-hmm.
with Google. You pay for, say, like a Google Advanced, which is coming or something like that. Maybe
they'll have three different versions.
They're
going to
have 17 different
names
of basically, let's just call it Bard. Okay. So say you're paying for a version of Bard. There's going to be a bundle. Like if you pay for Bard and you bundle that with these other, whatever software things, you get the device for free.
Oh,
that's the bundle I see is with these companies that are kind of already all in, because in any other way, like especially with a Pixel, we already have all these sweet frickin' AI features and they're the selling point of the device. That's the I call it the magic mm-hmm. of the Pixel. It freaking blows my mind every day still when I use this thing that I'm like, I just can't believe I do. And it gets better every time they update the software. So like Magic Eraser in the 2 years maybe that it's been out, if that, like, it's insane, Tristan, and it still blows my mind. And now that seems like such a basic thing compared to all these other computational photography and AI magic that they've put in. So that's kind of the bundle I could maybe see happening, but, you know.
So they got to get paid somehow. If they're running the stuff in the cloud, that's a lot of money.
But then
they're running
stuff
on device, like that's the thing is we've got like Gemini Nano running on device. So then there's less cost there, of course. So maybe you've got a two-tiered thing where how they brand it could depend on the handset maker, in this case, Samsung, whether or not they'll be using the Gemini branding like quite explicitly is TBD. But maybe they'll say, well, okay, if you want Gemini Nano, yeah, it's free, built in. But if you want, was it Gemini? There's Gemini Pro and then there's Gemini Ultra. Is that the branding? I can't even keep track. So maybe there'll be add-ons, like maybe there'll be a rev share between Samsung and Google or something to be promoting that stuff. Or maybe Samsung will roll their own because some of their on-device features are made by Samsung. So I guess they're just kind of feeling out the market a little bit. And if people get hooked on these AI features and they want more and more and more, again, it's the freemium thing that you love, Tasia. So how many people will be satisfied with the free built-in features versus paying for the extra, like the equivalent of a ChatGPT Plus or Copilot Pro? So,
or perhaps
once again, watch this space.
Google Bard with Gemini Pro. Dun, dun, dun. Because guess what? It's rolled out, Tristan.
Mm-hmm.
And Bard, powered by Gemini Pro Model, is officially available in more than 40 languages and 230 countries. It's here! So you might recall there was a double check feature that they had rolled out as well. That is also now available in more than 40 languages. So the double check was basically you can check via Google searches, like you click something in Bard and it checks via Google searches the accuracy of what it's claiming in Bard, which is very nice. So that's 40 more languages now. And image generation is here. So you can officially generate your images in Bard. The caveat, as of right now, this is English only. So images created by Bard will have a Synth ID digital watermark, by the way, which is developed by DeepMind, embedded in pixels. The catch for that is
that's Synth ID, right?
That's Synth ID, correct. Okay. But the catch for that is you have to use Google's tools to identify those images. So it's kind of like, you know, they're trying to put the safety rails in place a little bit. As we know, they were a bit slower to roll kind of everything out. But here's what the Google announcement said. It said, there's a clear distinction between visuals created with Bard and original human artwork. They also said that they banned the generation of named people in an effort to avoid the creation of deepfakes, kind of like we saw with My Queen, Taylor, and we've seen with a lot of celebrities. I mean, you and I had talked way at the beginning of days of this show with deepfake Tom Hanks, and oh, there was deepfake Mr. Beast, and there's just been a myriad of this stuff. It took McQueen and the, you know, viralness of that and the explicit content of that to really, you know, for these companies to start going, okay, hang on a second. Because Bard is trying.
Because they don't want to face the wrath of the Swifties, right? That's the kind of the shame of it all. There have been all sorts of people who have been suffering with this issue, lesser celebrities, let alone, you know, we talked about school students and whatnot. Yeah. But
if,
you know,
this
once
is
it
what
hits
happened,
someone high profile, oh, now we got to take it seriously. And next thing you know, they're in the levels of government, they're talking about Taylor Swift. It's like, all right, that's what it takes.
That's because that's what's in the news, and that's what, what do you think about this? And, you know, we'll talk about that in a bit. But it's like, if that's what can finally get people talking and realizing, like, yeah, preteens, teens have been dealing with this at school. Maybe we should figure it out. So that's kind of your latest, at least as of this week, Bard updates. There's more Google news.
You don't say.
Let's take a guess what it is, because last week
Google raised its generative video tool count to 3 with Imogen Video. Imogen or Imagine? I mean, I can see.
That's what I want. My mind wants to say Imogen, but then I think it's Imagine.
It's Imagen.
Right.
Maybe we should ask it.
I think it's a play on Imagine, but it's
Google
spelled
Bard.
Like you want to say Imogen.
Yeah. So we've had Imogen Video, Video Post, and most recently, Lumiere. Well, now it's announced. I mean, these announcements are coming every week. You got to keep up.
We need another name.
We need another show. We need a bigger show. Google needs another name. It announced new and improved tools for generating images, music, and text. Okay, so last week was video. Now it's images, music, and text.
Okay.
So using AI. So we've got image effects, music effects, and text effects. And these are all things that they've been working with in the labs for a while. Image effects is a text-to-image tool. And I'm pretty sure, you know, they've got other ones too, but this has an interface with expressive chips that allow users to experiment with different dimensions of their creations. It also uses Synth ID for digital watermarking, like we touched on, and IPTC metadata to provide more information about the AI-generated images. What is IPTC, you ask? Well, that's part of our job here, to decode stuff that you might not understand, and we probably don't either. But we learned together that IPTC is a consortium of the world's major news agencies and other news providers and news industry vendors, and acts as the global standards body of the news media. So you can see how that's relevant for establishing the provenance of media, including images, right? So it's all tied into watermarking and all that kind of stuff. So since Imogen 2, which is the model that powers image effects and other generative AI options in Google's products, has an upgraded ability to generate its highest quality AI-generated photorealistic images yet, Google says it's made significant investments in data safety and guardrails to limit problematic outputs, like those we just mentioned in the last story. Then there's music effects. And Google says it's made upgrades to the Music LM model, which I believe we've talked about either on this show or on Momentous Live before, which includes faster generation of music and higher quality audio and generated songs of up to 70 seconds long. And that's a space that's wild. The quality of music that's being produced by AI now, it's like it's come so far in the last couple of years, just like all this stuff has. And then there's text effects. Google has rolled out the usability updates in the aim of improving navigation and the overall user experience. So more kind of housekeeping stuff with text effects. So get this, folks in the US, Australia, New Zealand, and Kenya can try out these new and revamped tools in the AI test kitchen starting February 1st. And again, it's only in English for now. So good luck navigating all the different Google tools that are out there, be they image generation within Bard or image generation with like the image effects in this stuff, and then we got the text and the music, and because they had another music one before. So we need to do like a family tree.
We need a spreadsheet, exactly. It's like a
maybe we'll get Google Bard to generate one for us.
Hey, there's a good use, Tristan.
If only one of us had access to it. So yeah,
I'll do it.
That's the Google. That's our Google update for now. But this talk about about image generation leads into some other governmental and regulatory news.
We kind of touched on it a few minutes ago with, you know, what does it take to get the government's attention? And apparently your answer is Taylor Swift. So
that's what it takes to add $300 million in value to the NFL, apparently.
Queen energy. NFL, Taylor's version. So on January 30th, a bipartisan group of senators introduced a new bill that would criminalize the act of spreading non-consensual and sexualized digital forgeries created using artificial intelligence. So, of course, they have to say things like digital forgeries. So digital forgeries are defined as a visual depiction created through the use of software, machine learning, artificial intelligence, or any other computer-generated or technical means to falsely appear to be authentic. So that's your definition of what they think digital forgeries means. So you know I love a good name, right? So are you ready for the name of this bill? Disrupt Explicit Forged Images and Non-Consensual Edits Act of 2024. Or the Defiance Act. It's like they really just wanted to spell a word.
You know, there's someone who works in a windowless office somewhere in the Capitol that their job is to come up with backronyms. It's like, how can we make this act sound cool and get people's attention?
I want to call it the Defiance Act, but every letter has to stand for something. It just rolls off the tongue. So anyway, the legislation would also provide a path to civil recourse for the victims as well, who had their images depicted in either maybe nude or some type of sexually explicit way. So The Guardian reported that through the bill, victims could sue individuals who produced or possessed the forgery with intent to distribute it, or anyone who received that material knowing it was not made with consent. Yes. So now that's the trick, is in
that's
that language.
Casting a wide net.
Correct. Is knowing. And like,
everyone,
the
check
burden
your hard drives.
Proof. Yeah, like, what's the burden of proof if you're going to try somebody in court on that? And God, we should have had a lawyer. Ah!
What if you have terrible friends in a group chat and they start like, sending that stuff around? Like, ugh.
Right. So this is, be careful with that language. But Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin explained in a press release that the bill's quick introduction was spurred explicitly by the viral images of Taylor Swift and the White House's demand for accountability. Now, here's what I just want to add on that. I don't know if you watched that presser. I watched a bit of that press conference. the headlines were very like, government's going to act because of Taylor Swift and all this kind of stuff. Really what happened was, like, a reporter asked the question of, like, this happened to Taylor. And, like, what are you going to do? Obviously, that's not what the reporter said or sounded like. But that's why, A, it was even brought up in the first place in the press conference, because they were explicitly asked about the Taylor Swift content. So that's how it got brought up. Now, this bill itself, obviously, he's saying it was spurred from that, which is great, I suppose, if that's what he wants to say. But hopefully they were thinking of these things. I mean, with a name like the Defiance Act, I hope you were thinking of that longer. Disrupt, explicit, forged images, a non-consensual edicts act. Say that even once. But here's my thing. Regardless of what you want to say spurred it, and whatever anybody's opinion on it is, and, you know, I think we're in agreement that people have been dealing with this before, celebrities and non-celebrities, and they will be dealing with this for a long time after. So to me, regardless of what finally spurs them, it's like, yeah, let's frickin' go. Because real people without the resources, it really sucks that it happened to her, and it's horrid. She's got resources to hold everybody accountable. Most of us don't. And that doesn't make it okay, but most of us don't. So I look at her as, once again, pioneering for us little guys.
So just to dig in just a little bit into this issue, and it kind of relates to the next one as well, as but in a more, even more horrifying context. So with these deepfakes, these explicit deepfakes of folks, I could see, I mean, I don't know who would argue this, like, because they would be taking quite the reputational hit. But if for some reason you got into some sort of court challenges, and I'm not, you know, a constitutional lawyer or any of that kind of stuff, but one could say, well, what's the problem? There's no copyright issues here. We're not distributing or replicating copyrighted material. These could maybe fall under something like fair use. Whether it's parody or commentary or what other sort of context one might add to it and say, like, and no one's, you know, is anyone actually getting harmed here? This wasn't pictures taken of these people without their consent, because they're not real pictures. It's the image and likeness being presented in a way that wasn't consented to, but it's not actually them. So I could see some people sort of splitting hairs here to, like, you know, lawyers and well-paid lawyers maybe defending someone in a case like this, especially if, you know, you have to determine intent to distribute, but if you're even receiving this stuff, then there's also the notion of, or the whole idea of some unintended consequences of far-reaching initiatives like this, similar to when you get into things like, this is a thing that happens, presented without comment, but people, minors exchanging sexy time photos, mm-hmm. you know, to one another. Some people have been charged with child pornography because of that, even though it's from one minor to another. And then what happens when the minor in possession of such stuff ages out? Then all of a sudden, if it wasn't child porn before, now it is? Or if it was, you know, if stuff being swapped, does it matter if it was consensual or not? I mean, it's still, if it's on its face, and this is talking about, like, real photos, not even getting into the AI territory. Are we going to end up with a whole bunch of, you know, hapless or ignorant or misguided young people getting caught up in this sort of thing as well? And think of all the reputational consequences that get handled. Because, you know, until you're 25, your prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed and people do dumb things. So it's just, it's really, really fraught territory. And so I just hope that the government officials who are looking at these issues, who are talking to big tech folks, who we're going to talk about in a moment, that they are proceeding with any kinds of regulation in a very mindful and careful way, because there's always the idea of second and third order effects, unintended consequences, and the like. And whatever they do, this stuff is going to exist anyhow. So is it worth the energy for law enforcement and whatnot to be pursuing these things? Or is it only when a high profile person, you know, gets affected and now everyone's going to like, you know, get all excited about it for a while and then it's going to, you know, in 6 months, it's going to go away until some, you know, until someone else gets hit, right?
I think I would like to see it dealt with more in lines of almost like a revenge porn situation. Because in the States, we actually don't have anything federally protecting us, mm-hmm, believe mm-hmm. it or not. There's a few individual states that have revenge porn laws. We don't have anything federally. So I think something like this probably falls somewhere in that type of realm. But I do want to see them take some type of action, because it's like we've talked about before, like this could ruin your life. Like if this happened, and even though it's, I know it's not me, it looks like me, it mm-hmm. talks like me, and it's doing whatever it's doing, like that is so damaging and also skeezy, because like you're seeing yourself exposed and like
for sure.
you've lost your body autonomy, which and lost enough of that in the freaking States as it is.
What if it gave me visible abs, though? Would that be okay?
Yeah. What if it gave me Jennifer Lopez's body? It's okay. It's fine. No. Like, so I think it's got to fall more in that realm. But what does that look like? Because we don't even have anything federally for that here. So that's kind of why it's like, I'm glad something's at least spurring it. And to your point, I hope the ball continues rolling once people have forgotten about this in a day.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like, and is a bad law better than no law, right? There's that whole debate too. So please get it right. I mean, it'll probably take a lot of effort and a lot of revisions to get it right. And they'll probably tie it to something like border funding or whatever. So let's move on to a related yet even more horrifying issue. And we won't dwell on this too much, but it all has to do with the dark side of generative AI. That's the thing, is we get the bad along with the good. And there's a recent article in Ars Technica saying how cops are bogged down by a flood of fake AI child sex images, according to a report. So all as part of all these hearings and action on Capitol Hill in the last few days, at the end of January, there was a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on online child safety, and CEOs of Meta, TikTok, Snap, Discord, and X, formerly Twitter, testified on a variety of challenges in this fraught field. For example, there's a growing problem of realistic yet fake AI child sexual abuse materials. So it's not just Taylor and et al. So this is known as CSAM. And CSAM came up in a couple of years ago when Apple was trying to do some device scanning efforts to alert people of this material on their phones, or maybe parents if it's a minor, or et cetera. And they were trying to do it in a way that was mindful, but it ended up being just too thorny and they ended up pulling the plug. So there's this growing problem that's making it harder for law enforcement to investigate real crimes against abused children, because the zone is being flooded, right?
So yeah, because wouldn't they have to investigate what comes across their desk? Like, it looks real.
Yeah, and you know, they're probably overworked and underpaid as it is, right? You know, starved for resources. So AI-generated CSAM currently exists in a legal gray zone of existing federal and state laws, sound familiar, that may or may not apply. And there's recent legislation proposed to address the issue of AI-generated non-consensual intimate images. So there's
Because who's the perv? Why would you generate that? You disgusting pervy predator. So that's who we need to find out. Who's generating the content?
Well, tonight on Dateline, to catch an AI predator. So there's the Defiance Act, as you mentioned, the Disrupt Expletive Forged Images and Non-Consensual Edits Act. But then there's another one called the Preventing Deepfakes of Intimate Images Act. I don't see a word there, so maybe that's why it hasn't caught on. There are a couple of bills in the works. One of them was kind of proposed and then kind of dropped, and then it's made a comeback. AI is making it harder for platforms, for the social media platforms and other digital platforms, to monitor child sexual exploitation. And it's not just social media, but it's also, you know, what about like Google Drive and Dropbox and all this stuff. A lot of these things are being exchanged on other places, and including, you know, encrypted tools, Telegram, Signal, WhatsApp, and the like. So, you know, it's making it harder for platforms to monitor the child sexual exploitation, and they're, you know, how industry collaboration and more resources for law enforcement are needed, right? So to complicate things even more is that there are CSAM detection tools, AI-powered CSAM detection tools, like the Apple ones that we just mentioned, but they're generating, quote, unviable reports, which is gumming up investigations managed by law enforcement teams, which are already stretched for resources, as mentioned. So in addition, okay, so we've got real CSAM out there, horrible. We've got fake CSAM, also horrible, but I guess one could say, well, at least actual children aren't being harmed in that case, even though the training data was like, what model is training on that data? Don't even get me started. And then the, you know, talk about second order effects, the fact that we've, with all this stuff, now it's like AI is having trouble telling what's what, and it's not being, so you can get false positive, false negatives, all that kind of thing. So there was one commenter on this Ars Technica story that added even another wrinkle, and there's going to be so many of these wrinkles for corporations that are hosting digital media and allowing the transmission of digital media, which can include this kind of stuff, and legislators, regulators, you know, the courts. Is so what, here's just one example. This commenter said, I'm still confused about how one knows the difference between a 17-year-old collection of pixels and an 18-year-old collection of pixels. How do you apply those rules to something which technically doesn't have an age but may look like an age or so? What if it's just if it's a representation of a 22-year-old that just happens to look like a 16-year-old? I mean, that's also a thing too, right? Some people, that's a thing for some folks. They like them, if not young, to look young. So it's, like I said, it's...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fraught. And we're gonna turn the corner here, and we've got mostly positive stories from Tasia's nunk, but
yeah, let's talk about my nunk.
We're gonna need some AGI, some like
dun, dun, dun.
The artificial general intelligence, the next level, the singularity. Maybe it can help us with the dark side of AI, or maybe it'll make it worse.
AGI,
what say you,
will
Tasia?
Save us all. Well, exactly. My nunk, Sam Altman, says,
and that's Nerd Hunk, just for those who may have missed that episode.
My nunk says that AGI is coming imminently in the near future, though he didn't really say what near future exactly means. But here's what he says. Quote, it will change the world much less than we all think, and it will change jobs much less than we all think. So he said that at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. So what he is saying is obviously very different from what other attendees and what other experts in the industry have been saying, because many have predicted and are predicting that we could see dramatic job losses starting as early as this year because of generative AI. So then if you take AGI...
Journalism!
Yeah, AGI into the mix. So also to back up, critics have also discounted the concept of AGI as misleading, because we really haven't settled on like a generally agreed upon definition of the term. I think you and I talked about this a while ago about what Altman says they define it as. So here's what OpenAI says. Their definition states that AGI is a system that outperforms humans at most economically valuable work. So that's how OpenAI defines AGI. So I think we probably need to start at what exactly how we all define it, and then we decide whether we hit the panic button or not. My thing is, I don't think he's far off in terms of saying it's not going to change it as much as we all think, because I think right now everybody's hitting a panic button and saying the jobs, and they're coming for our jobs. But a lot of companies are realizing the expense and the power it takes to do any type of task with an AI system. So I think it sounded really cool at the surface, and a lot of companies kind of bought in and were like, yeah, we could get rid of heads and have an AI do it. And then they realized this is expensive. So I think from that standpoint, he's probably not wrong. From that standpoint, he's probably not wrong. But you know, I'm biased to my nunk, so.
I think this is further argument for people pursuing the trades, quite frankly. And
yes,
we've seen a drop off in certain, especially in males, a drop off in university enrollment. And after decades of negligence, I think a lot of jurisdictions are starting to realize that trades are important. We need people to be able to build things and service things. We need plumbers and electricians and drywallers.
Everybody needs to know a good plumber, a good electrician, and a good car person. Good grief.
Because AI, it's going to take a while for AI or AGI to come for those. I mean, once we get into robots, for sure. I mean, there's a lot more engineering challenges. And everyone's making progress there. Boston Dynamics and Tesla and Google. Everyone's got the robot stuff going too. So, I mean, that's just a question of time. Now, as to the how much AGI will have an impact, there's that old rule, and I can't we'll have to look it up later, but basically that maxim that says people tend to overestimate the impact of certain phenomena like technology in the short term. So all the people, like a lot of the decelerationists, all the doomers, etc., they're going like, ah, but a lot of people also tend to underestimate the impact in the long term. So maybe because there's the people in the web talking about the World Wide Web in the early 90s, and there are some people like, oh my God, this is going to change the world. This is going to democratize information. Everyone, we're going to disintermediate everyone. Get rid of all the middlemen. It's going to be this grand utopia, and it's going to happen. And things happened eventually, but they didn't turn out the way they wanted. But then the people who wrote it off as being a fad were also very, very wrong. Once it got over the hump, we got to critical mass and subsequent iterations of interactivity available on the web, Web 2.0, whatever Web 3.0 is, depending on your definition. So yeah, it's fundamentally changed humanity, right? That the global information network that most of us have the privilege of having the access to in our pockets. So with AI and ultimately AGI, it could be one of those things that people are like, it's going to be either amazing or terrible in the short term. May not be that quick, but in the long term, it could be amazing and or terrible.
Well, isn't he developing a bunch of chips? Like, where does this fit in with his?
Well, if you want to power these ambitions,
yeah,
you're going to need a bigger moat. And by that, I mean competitive moat, of course.
Of course.
So you may have heard about the ambitious plans of OpenAI, led by its CEO, Sam Altman, to develop its own AI chips and chip fabrication plants, or fabs, to meet the growing demand for specialized hardware for advanced AI models. This came up in November during the whole OpenAI boardroom drama and the Sam getting kicked out and coming back. One of the contentions being reported was that he was a little distracted by other efforts, such as going out and raising funding for these chip manufacturing partnerships, and or building AI devices with Johnny Ive's company, Love From, or any other such things. And the question was he doing this as like side gigs, or was he doing it on behalf of OpenAI? Well, whatever it was at the story was at the time, this sounds like this is within the context of OpenAI. So maybe he's been, maybe it was going to be like that all along, or maybe he's been chastened a little. So now this initiative is called Project Tigris, and it's under the aegis of OpenAI, and it's the name of the company's venture to create a dedicated chip tailored to optimize the processing requirements of its AI models. So it aims to improve the performance and efficiency of their models and potentially unlock new possibilities in fields ranging from natural language processing, or NLP, to computer vision, all essential parts of, you know, decoding language, expressing things in languages, seeing things in images and the real world, whether static or video. So you need a lot of, there's a lot of processing horsepower. Mm-hmm. And we've seen how our phones have gotten more and more powerful, especially since the advent of things like Apple's own custom silicon and Google's own Tensor chips. And then, of course, other initiatives from other makers, such as Qualcomm. Not to mention all the stuff that NVIDIA has been doing. You know, it wasn't just about, they went from gaming to crypto mining, and now, hey, what do you know? These GPUs work great for AI as well. Just so
fell
happens the math works out.
Into a gold mine.
Exactly. But, you know, so they've got cards that are, you know, they've got these cards with these high-end chips that can go for like $80 to $100,000 a pop, right? And companies are buying up thousands of them. Tesla's buying a ton, for example. So that's real CapEx, or capital expenditure for organizations. That's real cost there. And OpenAI has got some money, and they've got a great large partner in the form of Microsoft. But this is the kind of thing where if you start talking about designing and building your own chips, you're building fabrication plants, these are the kinds of things that take 5 to 10 years to manifest. So at least it's good to see that there's a long-term vision there. Again, what they say, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. So that's what's going on here, because most people didn't even hear about, haven't even heard about AI, OpenAI as of 18 months ago. So this could be the continuation of talks that have been happening for longer than we even realize. But these things take time. So Altman has been wooing potential investors such as G42 and SoftBank. SoftBank has invested in all sorts of things, including WeWork, to secure substantial funds for building a network of fabrication plants around the world. The project also involves collaboration with top chip manufacturers such as TSMC in Taiwan, Samsung Electronics in, of course, South Korea, and Intel in the United States to leverage their expertise and technology. And now, obviously, there's a bunch of inherent challenges and risks associated with developing custom hardware. There's, you know, the incredibly high costs, as mentioned, the long time frames we're looking at, and of course the technical complexity of building and maintaining fabs, as well as the compatibility and scalability issues of the chips. Because that's the thing, is you can go down a road building chips with a certain architecture, and then what happens if you have a fundamentally large rethink of your algorithms, your processing? What if quantum computing becomes a thing? I mean, that's still a ways off for like mass produced or, you know, widely deployed. But if you change how you're optimizing your software so that it no longer works great on the custom chips that you've spent tens of billions of dollars to develop, when you factor in all the costs, that all of a sudden you're trying to turn like a battleship, right? And it's like that's going at full speed. And that takes, here's case in point. I think all those, a few years ago, lots of people were mining crypto on, there was something called ASICs, which are custom hardware for mining certain types of cryptocurrency, including Bitcoin. And then there were people who were using off-the-shelf graphics cards for mining other types of cryptocurrency, such as Ether on the Ethereum network. I know people that invested lots and lots of money building custom rigs with graphics cards, and gamers were having trouble getting their graphics cards. Then what happened is that the Ethereum network had a major rethink, and they moved from something called proof of work to proof of stake. No longer were miners getting rewarded for these computationally intensive processes, trying to solve puzzles to earn rewards in the form of ETH or Ether. they were now, after a certain point last year, going to get rewarded based on how much ether a person or like an individual or a pool of individuals were simply holding and acting to secure the network. All of a sudden, you've got all these graphics cards that people are unloading. Graphics cards have been run hard for months and months, if not years. And now they've got to like try and pawn them off on Facebook Marketplace or elsewhere to people like maybe gamers that weren't, had trouble getting a hold of them for a while. We're getting frustrated. But, you know, what is the state of that hardware in? So that's just one example how an underlying technology software paradigm could change. And all of a sudden it could render the hardware irrelevant. So I hope that part of the game plan is to maintain some flexibility there. So the question is OpenAI's strategy viable or is it even necessary? I mean, could they continue simply to partner with others and, you know, just absorb the costs in that sense? Or, you know, it's kind of like renting versus owning, right? Because what these plans are, if they come to fruition, it certainly diverges from the cost-effective approach favored by many other AI industry peers, mostly the small to medium-sized ones who are using, a lot of whom are using off-the-shelf models, such as those from OpenAI or from Meta and others, and off-the-shelf hardware. You know, they're not going and making their own chips. Is this the right approach? Or, you know, not everyone is NVIDIA or Google or Apple and can afford the billions and billions of dollars to develop its own silicon. So is this overreach, Teja? Or is this focus? Is this their differentiator that's going to set them apart from the others, or at least at the very least keep up with the big boys?
It's not overreach, it's focus. But the issue is not just the cost, it's the amount of energy and power it's all taking.
Just a little, just a wee bit.
It's all using up too much. To put it in layman's terms. And you know who agrees with me? You know who agrees with me, Tristan?
Who?
My nunk agrees with me.
There's more Sam Altman news? Do tell.
There's more. So I just want to preface this by saying that some experts estimate that this whole AI industry could soon suck up as much electricity as an entire country.
Speaking of crypto.
It's, you know, so what's a nunk to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, truly, look for cheaper alternatives. So not only does Sam Altman say that these AI models may require more power, but that they will need a whole new power source. So he said, quote, it motivates us to go invest more in fusion. So then he added how we need better ways to store energy from solar power as well. So like, let's put our nerd hats on for a bit and talk for a second about fusion.
Were we wearing them already?
Yeah. Fusion energy. I'm going to try my best to explain this. Because fusion energy has kind of been touted as like a holy grail, mm-hmm. representing, you know, maybe like a limitless source of energy without really bad risks like nuclear fission. You know,
The waste associated with the traditional nuclear, for sure.
Correct.
And meltdowns.
But despite decades and decades of research, mm-hmm. scientists still have yet to figure out a way to fuse atoms in a way that produces net positive amount of energy at scale. So like when you're talking about the amount of scale we would need to power these type of systems. Lots of billionaires, though, have been investing in nuclear fusion. I feel like we talked a really long time ago about like Bill Gates doing it, Jeff Bezos. They've all kind of dabbled and they've put a lot of their money towards this. And you know who else has? Mr. Sam Altman as well. Mm-hmm. About $375 million in a nuclear fusions company called Helion Energy. And wouldn't you know, Tristan, that company has a signed deal with Microsoft.
Oh, you don't say.
Who, as we all know, in case everybody forgot, has invested about, I don't know, $13 billion into OpenAI.
So
everything,
it's just
the tangled web we weave, it's all so connected.
Synergy.
Sure, that's the word we'll use, synergy. Altman has also suggested that AI itself could crack the case on how to make fusion a practical energy tech. So that would be kind of very meta, wouldn't it?
And not entirely out of the realm of possibility. We've shown it's great at pattern matching. Somehow can provide insights that we can't glean ourselves. Has made incredible advancements in things in places, fields like protein folding, where we were throwing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of CPUs at folding at home on people's PS3s and on their computers for years and years. And I don't know which AI it was, but some platform managed to make some great, amazing breakthroughs in a matter of months, maybe years. Again, we should probably fact check that. You hear so much stuff. There's so much news, but protein fold, if they can do it for protein folding, maybe they can do it for nuclear fusion.
Well, I just want to leave you with this little thought because, you know, how much energy does it take? I'll tell you how much energy, Tristan. Energy consumption of something like a ChatGPT, as an example. So say you make one ChatGPT inquiry, just one. You're not like using it for the day. You're prompting it once. That compared to, say, like an inquiry on, I don't know, like a Gmail or your email provider, is anywhere from 10 to 100 times more power hungry. One inquiry. So I just want everybody to think about that and say, uh-oh. Panic! Well, I feel like once an episode, I'm like,
straws,
where
folks.
Is my... Yes, so next time you're pissed off about the paper straw, yeah. It's melted in your mouth as you're trying to drink.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, like,
it's crazy.
You know, when you look at the progress of humankind, I mean, if you want to get big picture here, is that human flourishing has almost always correlated with higher energy consumption. So it's a question of the externalities from that energy consumption, you know, whether it's, you know, pollution, consumption of natural resources, and the like. And that's why fusion would be great. There are other people with other ideas. Of course, Elon Musk is saying, why don't we do solar, guys, and batteries? Hey, what do you know? I happen to be involved in the battery business and the solar business. We got Solar City as well. So, you know, just block off 100 square miles in, you know, the Middle East, and that's enough power for most of the world. I think it was something like that. It was, I mean, a big space, but in the grand scheme of things, a small space. Then you get into issues of transmission and storage.
Storage.
And to manufacture these things doesn't, you know, not without its own externalities as well, because you have to mine resources for the making of the solar panels and for the batteries themselves and so on.
It's an age-old problem.
And modern nuclear, smaller form factor, molten salt, pebble bed reactors. There's all sorts of research happening in fission as well as fusion. And fission might be the stopgap until we get to fusion and that dream of limitless power. And then there's also things like if we are doing solar, I mean, dams are great batteries. I mean, again, building dams has its own greenhouse gas impact. You know, concrete's not great, for example, and there's impacts on, like, you know, valleys and farmland and stuff like that. But you can capture natural rainfall and or snow melts, or you can even pump water up into dams and, you know, using energy, solar energy that you've got while it's live, keep it until you need it, release that water, and then you're powering turbines for when you have your high demand. So it's exciting because with the electrification of our economy, the move towards electric vehicles and the like, there's a lot of action in this territory already, and AI initiatives will benefit from this, whether it's fusion in the long term or other solutions in the short term. All this stuff takes power.
But we still have more open AI news, even though we're already at an hour.
We're almost done. We'll make it quick. We'll end on a positive note. This week, there was one last bit of OpenAI news. The company has introduced a new feature in ChatGPT that allows users to bring multiple custom personalities, known as GPTs. So we've been able to make custom GPTs since November. And then the GPT store finally opened up in January 2024, where you can actually sell your GPTs to other people. You can introduce multiple GPTs into a single ChatGPT conversation by using the @ symbol. So you basically tag one of your custom GPTs. So as a quick refresher, GPTs are custom roles or skills that users can create or download from the GPT store, and they can help you with different tasks or topics such as health, writing, editing, custom knowledge sets from your company, your personal life, what have you. You can create experts that focus on smaller domains. It also, so this new feature enables a quasi teamwork among GPTs within ChatGPT proper. So for example, in the Ars Technica articles we were looking at, they created a wellness guide GPT crafted as an expert in human health conditions. And they also created a canine health advisor for dog-related health questions. So they started off the conversation asking about saying something, oh, I'm not feeling well because I ate too much chocolate. What should I do? Answer concisely in two sentences. And the wellness guide gave an answer. Then they brought in the canine health advisor. They said, oh, my dog ate some of the chocolate too. Is that bad? Answer concisely. And it's not shown in the screenshot, but they actually tagged canine health advisor who was brought in to give some more expertise on the canine side of things as opposed to the human side of things. Because that's one of the ongoing debates with these large language models is that, is it better to have one gigantic model that tries to be an expert at everything, or is it better to have more and more efficient to have smaller experts? So you may recall weeks ago now, we were talking about one of the initiatives from Mistral AI. And they had something called a mixture of experts approach, which kind of did this live and behind the scenes. So in the case of the ChatGPT format, they started the default ChatGPT chat, hit the at symbol, started typing the first few letters of the other GPT, so wellness, and then later on, they started asking about dogs, and they typed in the at symbol and started, and then typed in the first few letters of the canine expert, and it the canine wellness expert has entered the chat. There's other examples. You could have a mixture of experts in a single chat for writing. You could have one GPT help you with writing, and then you could introduce another GPT to help you with editing, because those are actually different skill sets. It's basically whatever you can imagine where, and again, whether it's corporately or personally, where you've trained these highly honed experts on given topics, and you don't want to have to start a whole new chat with a different thing and then try and copy and paste stuff together. You can do it all live, like a group chat. So there you go, Tayshia. We can be having group chats now where we got one human and multiple robots in the chat. So could this be a step towards our AI agent future with if you start adding a hint of automation in here where the GPTs can work together as a team to fulfill more complex tasks directed by the user? Again, just add in a few hooks, get them to talk to each other and not just us, then you let them off. GPT agents are a thing that people are working on, and maybe this is a step toward that actually working well for folks. Next thing you know, they could be booking your flights for you. There could be flight GPT and hotel GPT, different skill sets, right? And route planning GPT, all that sort of stuff. So again, you just have to let your mind run wild a little bit and start training your own small team of experts. What do you think? What do you want your GPTs to do for you today? You can let us know at feedback@AINamedThisShow.com. Okay, let's wrap this. Let's land this thing, Tayshia. But before we do, I'm introducing a new segment called Stupid AI Tricks.
Yes.
Okay. And it's
stupid
just
stupid AI tricks. There's my.
Love you. That's perfect. You're gonna get royalties or something. But I don't know. So it's just gonna be a very simple one to get us started to wet our whistle for subsequent weeks.
Okay.
Anything that pops to my mind that I want to get done quickly, and I'm like, oh, if there's only a faster way. Sometimes there's manual interventions. Sometimes you can write macros and scripts to help you with that stuff. But then every time I run up against something, I'm like, I wonder if ChatGPT could help. Or insert your own LLM, your favorite chatbot of choice in there, be it Bard or what have you. Anthropic's Claude, and so on. So like I can't even remember what it was I was doing specifically, but I needed to extract a bunch of URLs from a web page, and they were encoded into the text of the hyperlinks. So I could copy and paste the page, but then it's just going to give me the it's just going to give me the hyperlinked text amongst all the other text of the whatever giant article was there, and not necessarily the URLs themselves. If you pasted in a special way as plain text, you might get it to reveal the URLs. Great. But I thought, but you still have to do the manual cleanup about all the other crap from the article. So this is something that, if I did it manually, maybe it would be 15 minutes or so, tops. But I thought, why don't I just paste this into ChatGPT? Again, be careful that you're not putting sensitive stuff in there, but this was a public webpage, so no big deal. What I did is I went into the, I did a view source on my web browser, and I copied the HTML code of that particular chunk of the page that I was trying to extract the URLs from. I pasted that into ChatGPT, and I said, hey, could you please extract the URLs from this text and present them the URLs only? Instructions to that effect. And it just did it. And it took like maybe 5 or 10 seconds.
And it worked.
And I was able to just copy and paste that list and do what I wanted to do with that list of URLs. So the take-home message is, if you have a subscription to any of your LLMs, whether they're the basic versions or the pro versions, the plus versions, which may give you better results, just anything that pops in mind, just try it. You might be surprised. So that is our stupid AI trick for this week.
And with that, we've made it to the end. This episode of AI Named This Show. Listen, help feed the algorithms. Do you know that we are on Instagram? Not just me and Tristan personally, but AI Named This Show is on Instagram. You can find us there. Give us a follow so you can learn all about our episodes. Sometimes, guys, we even post reels. Sometimes we're on it and we actually do the thing. So head to Instagram.com/AI Named This Show. And thank you so much for listening to another episode of AI Named This Show.
AI and goodbye.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.